Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Another episode of Bootstrap Web. I'm Jordan. Brian, nice to be back.
Yes, good to be back on. How's it going, man?
It's going pretty well. You know, we've turned the corner here. It's September. Kids are back in school. Feels a little bit more normal. My calendar all of a sudden filled up with a bunch of trips. That always kind of energizes and excites me. Business travel. It feels good to get the kids back in and just start to settle into this new house and just get a semblance of normalcy.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're in the new house now.
Yes. And of course, e-commerce, as soon as it hits September, everything just picks up. So the mood overall, the company is just like, all right, here we go. Let's get geared up for this Black Friday craziness. And it went from as soon as September 1st hit, we started processing $2 million a day, which is, you know, a good deal higher than our norm. It was like, okay, let's see what this season looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool. Yeah, I mean, you know, I always love when the cold weather comes back around here and the kids going to school. You know, they're just starting up school now, so that's great. Next week, I'm heading out to Martha's Vineyard for a little founder retreat thing. I couldn't come at a better time. You know, just I really need the break mentally, and it'll be fun to hang out with some friends and just have a break from everything. So can't get enough of the tiny comps, you know. When I have trips like this coming up, it usually makes me very productive in the week before. Yeah, this week was not that.
What happened this week, Brian?
I can go on and on about the rabbit hole within a rabbit hole within a rabbit hole that I went down this week, but that's going to be one of my updates. The other things on my list here, I thought I would touch on email marketing and maybe having to change my email provider again, which is annoying. I did hire that developer. That's the other thing. He's officially going to start with me the following week, the Monday that I get back from the trip. So that'll be good. But I'm really excited about that. I feel like I got pretty lucky finding this guy. So it should be awesome. Here's the thing. We were talking about this off air. It's not that bad. When you step back, you're like, actually, most of what happened this week was a good thing. And just in general, like even if I look back at like a whole month worth of stuff, sometimes like you just, it's this mental game of entrepreneurship where you just feel unproductive or you feel like what you had planned on doing didn't really happen. But then when you look back on it, like this happened last month, I actually felt like it was not a very productive month. I thought the numbers weren't doing very good. And then I sent out this update to my advisors and I looked at the numbers and they were all great. Like customer count doubled, like, you know, everything went really well. But for some reason, day to day, this like mental thing happens where I get so caught up in the thing that's right in front of me that it's hard to step back. And anyway, like this week, a number of things happened. Like Monday, this email thing happened where I'm just looking at my numbers on my newsletter that I send out every week, and the open rates have gone to shit. I don't know if other people have been seeing this stuff, but for me, for the past year, and I've been sending my newsletter for many years now, and I'm sending, you know, every week, whatever, like maybe the content is not as good as it used to be, or maybe I'm talking about things that my audience has shifted in different directions and whatnot. I don't know what it is, but I switched to ConvertKit about a year ago and it was good at first and now it's not. And
is this the rabbit hole you went down? Email?
That was the first one that
there are different layers.
Yeah. So I started looking at that. I'm like, you know, maybe I do need to switch providers at some point again, which is a total pain in the ass. I'm thinking about going to MailChimp, and this sounds like it's a total distraction. Maybe I shouldn't even touch it. But for me, I mean, it's really important for my whole business is to send stuff to my newsletter, work in public. I'm literally rolling out new products, Process Kit and whatnot. And so it's like, I need to know that people are up to date on what I'm doing, you know, my audience. Like that's what I use to get these things launched. So
yeah, and I think your subject lines and the content overall has gotten better. And so it's understandable you start to look at the tool and say, what am I not able to see that might be having an impact, which is a frustrating situation.
And, you know, like I connected my domain and everything for sending, like I'm trying to do all the right things. And then I know for a fact that there are people who are not seeing my emails, like they're not getting delivered. I would just hear from people that they didn't see a certain email that was referenced. Like, anyway, like if you happen to be listening to this podcast and you haven't seen an email newsletter from me in a while, like I have been sending them every week. So if that's true, please let me know if you know that you've been subscribed before.
I wonder how many people use Priority Inbox with Gmail.
I wonder about that too. You know,
I use it and it's been inconsistent recently on what makes its way into Priority and not. Like, I have people from my company email me and it won't be Priority, and I'll have, you know, some random cold email make it into there. So it's been a little strange.
Yeah. And all right, look, just being totally transparent, like 10% open rates, 11% open rates, pretty consistently for the last like 8 or 9 months. I mean, that's shit. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's not like I'm spamming my list. So I don't know.
Yeah. So that's worth digging into.
I'm thinking like, I'll probably end up just moving to MailChimp. It's a simpler tool, but they've been around a while. And I currently do use MailChimp for the process kit list, which is smaller, but the open rates on that are like 50, 60%. Those are getting delivered. And if I could phase my lists over to MailChimp over the next few months, I think that could probably help. And so as I started there, I started thinking about my websites, and this isn't totally related, but this is what got me into this week was there's two websites that I'm going to be building this month. One is the Process Kit marketing site. I finished the design on that. Now it's ready to code and launch. And the other one that I'm working on right now is my personal site, sort of a redesign, like, it's basically a redesign, but the goal on both of these is to not use WordPress. I'm done using WordPress for my sites. I've been wanting to do that for a long time. I don't like really much about WordPress at all these days. Like all my sites, I just put in like static HTML, CSS, and plug it into a WordPress theme so that I can have a blog, which is not efficient at all. And so I wanted to get up to speed on a static site generator. I kicked around a bunch of them. There's, you know, everyone's got a different favorite.
Yes. It's like a cult. It's a collection of cults.
Exactly. And my goal of this thing was to pick one where I could, you know, reuse a lot of the same stuff that I've been using in Rails, but for a simple site or a marketing site, and just develop a new workflow for me to design and code my websites. Not just one, but all of my websites going forward. Let me just get the workflow figured out and the tool set and get a template going so that I can spin that up anytime I need to. This week, I ended up settling on Jekyll. And, you know, I've heard a lot about Gatsby. I've heard a lot about Hugo and all these other ones. I looked a lot at Middleman. My goal here was to sort of stay in Ruby land. And that's basically Middleman and Jekyll. I figured Jekyll is sort of like the go-to, or the, maybe not these days the go-to, but it's the oldest, most well-known of these static sites. So if I'm going to step into the static site generation, maybe I should just start with Jekyll as my entry point. That was my thinking.
I don't know any of the words you're saying, but yes.
Well, I've got plenty more words that I'm about to say. That
yes, this Netlify and Statamic and Tailwind. Sure, I'm just going to keep making things up.
Yeah, so I do plan to use Netlify. That's a web host, basically, and they sort of specialize in static site generations. At least that's my understanding of it. Excited to try to use that. This is a rant that I made on Twitter. I'll make it here too, and this is what's, you know, drives me up the wall this week. So I'm starting to set up a basic clean slate boilerplate for me to start working on my personal site using Jekyll. Okay, great. I want to get Tailwind CSS installed on there so that I could use that as my CSS work on the site. That requires using NPM to install the package for Tailwind. What is NPM? I don't really know. I've sort of used it here and there in the past, but I never really understood how it works. Apparently it's pulling in these node modules into this project. Then you got to like compile your CSS and then now all of a sudden I'm using this thing post CSS, which I, you know, this stuff is new to me. I've probably touched it in the past, but I didn't really know what was going on. Then I'm like, all right, now I want to use Stimulus.js, which is how I use very little small bits of JavaScript in the Process Kit app. I use the Stimulus framework. I want to be able to reuse a lot of those little components that I've already built. I want to use that on my personal site, like when I need a dropdown or a modal or something. Okay, so get Stimulus installed, okay. but that requires Webpack. What the fuck is Webpack? You know, like
Brian. It's no wonder you had a bad week.
Yeah, like, and I mean, web developers who are in this every single day for years on end, they're like, oh yeah, just pull in that dependency with the package manager with Webpack, and oh, you could just put that through Gulp and fucking do like. I'm not in this day to day. I was years ago, and then I did this like 8-year hibernation where I started building businesses and focused on marketing and stuff. And then I come back and try to build stuff. It's like, what the hell happened to front end web development? I'm literally just trying to put HTML files, CSS files, and JavaScript files on a web server so I can see them. It's like
you do need a break in Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah. just to wrap this up, what sort of drove me crazy this week was on Monday, I had it in my mind that I'm going to use a static site generator, and those by their nature are simpler, and I'm going to use that. And maybe optimistically, I'd have a simple new design of my personal site by Friday, maybe not shipped, but like mostly done. Mm-hmm. And then I can go to Martha's Vineyard, and then I come back, and then I'll use what I learned. And I'll use that on the Process Kit site to build when I get back.
Makes sense.
That was the plan on Monday. On Tuesday, like I just said, all those crazy words that I just mentioned, I had to spend all day Googling and reading up and trying to get these things installed and working. Adam Wathen, who is the man, creator of Tailwind, he was nice enough to hop on a call and help me out and get some of this stuff figured out. And if you're not, you know, listening to Adam's podcast or following the stuff he's doing, it's just awesome. You have to get up on that. That's awesome. So he was nice enough to help me out, but you know, I don't like to bug my friends, and they're working on stuff. So I learned a lot, but it took like an extra 3 or 4 days. And these are technologies that I do probably need to wrap my head around and get a feel for. So in that sense, it was a productive week, but I did not end up like building anything that's actually usable yet, you know? So
how come you didn't ping me for help?
I know, I should have. Okay, so that's my rant.
So
rant is done.
It's tough, man. That happens, and you spin your wheels and don't make progress. But there is progress underneath it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, I mean, just didn't go according to plan.
This is the thing. You step back, and really, it's just an extra 3 or 4 days. Is that the end of the world? You know,
it's not.
And I did learn concepts that I did not know before that I'm going to use in all my projects going forward. That's
right.
The
it's almost like the only thing that went wrong was the expectations of being able to pick it up quickly. You just didn't know what you were getting into. If you had known, then you would have said, okay, it's going to take me a few days to get up to speed on this stuff. Yeah, there's a very big connection I keep making these days around feelings, around what we do for a living and the process and the people involved and the technologies involved and how that all leads to feelings. And they are very far from the objective truth, right? The objective truth, you get a glimpse at when you send an update and you see the numbers from last month to this month. I have the same issues. The feelings are disconnected from that objective reality. The feelings are influenced by recency, right? What just happened? From mood, from things at home, from your sleep, from your exercise, your diet, all these different things factor in. And it's complicated. It's tough to keep in mind. You know, we just had every month we do overages, which is the amount of billings we do for people that have processed a lot of money. And I don't feel like we're doing that well, but my head of success, she always, when she tells me the numbers for the month, she also tells me what it was compared to a year ago. And it's tripled, right? 300% growth since last year. Objectively amazing. On track, baby. Amazing.
Compared to last week, it's like a nightmare though. Like,
yes. Yes.
Yeah. That's all. I mean, but that's it. When you step back, even in just like a 30-day period or a 6-month or 12-month, yeah, you could, that's when you start to really say, and I started doing these monthly, I call them investor updates, but I don't actually have investors. That's been super helpful just for me to recap and just step back and see like, oh yeah, actually, you know what? The numbers did go in the right direction last month. So
yes, that is my favorite like micro trend that's happening. People without investors are just putting themselves into that position of sending out a monthly update to a select group of friends, maybe some advisors, maybe even investors are on that list. It gets the cadence going of that objective. Hey, here are the numbers. Here are the KPIs. Here's what we're thinking. And I'm on like 5 or 6 lists like that from a few of these companies that we're all familiar with, you know, like our peers. And it's awesome. And I respond whenever it makes sense, if I have something valuable to add. And I assume that's happening with other people too, from their different areas of expertise. It's only a good thing to get out into public and kind of perform that way.
It really is great. I've done 2 of them now, like 2 monthly updates. It's good for me personally because it's this feeling of accountability. And like, it's kind of like a mastermind in that way, but you know that you're going to need to like actually prepare this report. And it's not super long. It's just an email. I remember thinking like halfway through the month and like the customer count wasn't doing so great. And I was like, oh man, I'm going to have to report on this. You know?
Yes, it's there. It's there.
It's definitely there. And then it's also a good just way to stay in touch with all the people that you really want to be in touch with. And, you know, we all get so wrapped up in our own businesses and worlds here that it's easy to lose touch for 8-12 months at a time. But having this monthly email, that, you know, I don't expect a reply from anyone. Many people are nice enough to give a word or two back. And I'm on a few of these emails for other people too. And it is just a good way to stay in touch. And it's a good place to, obviously we don't talk about everything publicly here on the podcast. It's a good place to get the critical thinking and the critical questions out to other people, get some thoughts back without having to broadcast it on a podcast or something.
Yes. And it makes you root for the person and it keeps them top of mind. So it increases the likelihood for serendipity. It's just there. You just aren't forgotten. Cool, man. So on my side of things, I have 2 things to talk about today. The first one is our journey from product to platform is now complete. We have launched our first apps into the Carthook App Store. And so these other companies used our API to build an app, launched it into our App Store, and now people can connect to their services through an app inside of a Carthook App Store. So that like changes the nature of our product into more of a platform. And what we're on the lookout for is how do we create economic opportunity for those partners, right? That's why people are going to build apps, not because you ask them to and they're being nice, but because they see it and they say, there's something going on over there that if I build an app, that's going to provide economic opportunity for my company or for my idea or for myself in one way or another. Now that we have it in place, our thinking is turning from how do we get an app store going because we didn't know what we were doing. We had to figure that out. Now it's how do we show people that there's opportunity when they build apps.
Are they selling the apps or is it just like an integration sort of app store?
So it's an integration app store for now. But now we are talking to a few developers that are saying, well, this thing that doesn't exist in Carthook, I think people would like. And we are starting to also incorporate that into our thinking because we have had certain features that have been asked for years, literally years. And they're just not making their way up high enough on the priority list to do. And so we have taken one of those, something called an order bump. An order bump is the ability to easily add a product to your purchase on the checkout page itself by just hitting a little checkmark button. Like, do you want to add the digital version of this thing? Or do you want to add, you know, this extra thing? And so that is something that everyone wants. And we just haven't gotten to. It's been 2 years since people started asking us for this. And so we approached a developer and we said, look, if you build this, here's the API, here's what you need to do. You go work on it for a week and then go sell it for whatever, $20 a month, $50 a month. And then all of a sudden that's us presenting economic opportunity to a third party and saying, if you build here, you can build a business off of our backs.
But that's not really, that setup is not there yet.
That's there.
Oh, so I mean, they can sell it? They can sell an app, like an extension.
Now, we don't have that deep level of integration where we're doing the billing for them and we're taking the credit card. No, it's still basically connecting to the service. And if you don't have an existing account, you just click and go create an account and then connect the service.
Oh, I see.
But right. But it is they are seeing it. Cardhook merchants are seeing their app for the first time in the App Store. That's where the discovery is happening. And then they're going over to the site, signing up for the service, paying for it, and then coming back and completing the integration.
Got it. And are you doing or are you planning to do any sort of like revenue share? Like, you know, you're on the Cardhook platform, so Cardhook takes like 30%.
Right now, no.
Yeah.
But you can see where a platform like Shopify that we work on, how they started the same way. And right now you don't want to do anything to create more friction for people to build on your platform.
You just want volume at this point.
Or you just want volume.
Or you want the key, like the good apps in there.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And so we are talking to our like most important partners about building apps and then like going outward from there. But right now there's no friction. There's no revenue share. There's nothing. It's kind of like, what do we need to do to just promote this? But you can see how a few years later, when it's like a behemoth, then it becomes an attractive pie to take a slice out of.
Maybe you haven't dealt with this yet, or have you, the approval process? I guess there's multiple levels of that. Like one is like, is somebody building an app that Cardhook is going to be building into the core product?
Yes.
But there's also just like code review. Like, is this going to spam people? Is this a scam? Like, what is, like, you got to be careful of that. You know?
Yes. So we like to look at Shopify as where it ends up and then be okay with what we have being, you know, version one. So on the Shopify App Store, BigCommerce App Store, these established platforms, you go on your own, you start building an app and then you submit it for review. So we're not opening it up that way yet. Version one is private. Version one is you need to talk to us, ask us, and then we slowly open that up and show you the docs and talk with you and get on a call. So we have a HubSpot pipeline for apps that includes that whole process.
Got it.
Cool, yeah, man. But it's been a cool learning experience. It was not easy. We did not do it perfectly. We spoke with one partner and they were going to be the first one and they wanted to be the first one. And then we didn't communicate properly and we launched someone else before them and we disappointed them and we felt bad and we had to communicate that. And so all these different things that we're learning around it. Yeah. So that's on my list, but we basically just talked about it. So that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was the thing that I talked about, like the week, you know, with the static site stuff, like already talked about it. The email stuff, I already talked about that. The only other thing that I had was I did hire the developer. I could talk a bit about that process.
I think people want to hear about that process. And maybe you did get lucky, but it's never just luck. So tell us what you did, how it worked out.
Yeah. And this is, again, this is one of those things that actually came together pretty quickly. All in all, like I think I only spent maybe two or three weeks on going from the idea, hey, I should hire somebody, to found the guy, got it going. We agreed it's going to start on the 16th. So I guess it does take some work because it required a bunch of calls, but it wasn't like hours upon hours upon hours of work to get it done. The very first thing that I did just to see what's out there was to go on Upwork. I put up a typical ad on Upwork. I've hired developers through Upwork before. I just wanted to see what the market is for the type of developer that I'm looking for in the Upwork ecosystem. That would be the easiest thing if I could find somebody. And I think I talked about this, but I got like maybe 45, 50 applicants from that. And almost all of them were throwouts, or I didn't catch my interest enough to even want to talk to them. At first, I really wanted to find somebody in South America. That would have been ideal with the time zones and everything. I was still open to Europe and other places, but there were only like three people from South America. They didn't really seem like a good fit. And everyone else was from like India and Pakistan, a few people from Eastern Europe, but Upwork didn't really find anything there. So then my next step was to pay for an ad on WeWork Remotely, which I've used that many times to hire people for audience ops. I don't think that I've ever used it to hire a developer before.
How'd that go? We've had great responses from that site.
Yeah, that is a solid site. And for that, I created a page on my personal site with the description and the application form. Gravity form that just sends to me. So through that, I didn't get a ton of applications. I think I got something like maybe 20, maybe 18 or 20, something like that. And I also tweeted it out at this time too. So some people retweeted it and that may have helped as well. And WeWork Remotely also does get, somehow it gets syndicated to a couple of other remote job boards. I don't really know which ones, but I see other names coming in there. Out of those, I flagged like three or four people that I liked and I invited them to interviews. But the other one that I want to mention, aside from that, because I wasn't seeing a huge volume of applications, went to some friends in my mastermind group and they suggested, I want to get the website right. I believe it's bluecoding.com. Do you know them?
No. It's a job site for remote engineers.
The founder, David, yeah, bluecoding.com. He is a MicroConf person. I spoke to him at MicroConf. And some friends in my mastermind group sort of like reminded me about his whole service. And they're basically a developer recruitment placement agency, and they specialize in developers in South America.
Amen. Nailed it. Nailed it, David.
Yeah. And I'm not going to go into all the numbers of how their pricing works, but I do really like how that works. It's definitely more affordable than like a TopTal or paying a personal recruiter directly. I did get an intro and looked at that option as well. There's very little risk up front to start working with Blue Coding, and then they basically have the person work for Blue Coding, but they're really for you, and then there's an option to buy them out if you ever want to.
I see. So it is like a TopTal where they are working for Blue Coding and then you have the option to buy out.
Yeah. Yeah. But
that's again, a sweet model, because that buyout is effectively like a recruiter fee, but you've already worked with the person.
Exactly. Exactly. Really reasonable rates. And they specialize in South America. So they've got a really good system too. So they actually found two developers through their network. I did interview them and they both seemed decent, but I had already interviewed the guy who I ended up hiring. So I'm comparing them up against him, and
it was like, it's amazing how that happens. We just did the same thing with a product person. And then once you're like in love with a candidate, everyone else is like, not even close. And it kind of helps solidify the decision.
I want to give a shout out to Justin Jackson, because the guy who I ended up hiring mentioned that he heard about the application from Justin Jackson. Maybe it was a tweet or something like that, but so thank you, Justin. So this guy,
our man of the internet.
Yeah. So he ended up coming to my application form on my site, spoke to him. He's in South Africa, which is for me, it's like 6 hours ahead, which means that his afternoon is my morning here on the East Coast of the US, which is not too bad. And he seemed pretty flexible on the time zone anyway. Really, really experienced, like senior level. This past month, he just left a agency where he was basically a co-founder, worked there for the past 10 years. And I think he was just bought out. And so he's got a pretty good setup from that exit, if you will. And through that agency, he had built up and managed a dev team and mentored the developers underneath him and just led the whole tech on everything, specialized in Ruby on Rails and like a ton of other stuff. Has his own little product going on the side. And through his work on the agency, he really does resonate with the process kit idea, saying things like, we totally could have used this at the agency and stuff like that, and totally gets it. And I'm just really excited that he seems like the type of person that could be a really good mentor, like a code mentor for me, aside from actually working with me and getting a lot done on the roadmap. But he seemed really good to talk to. He has that senior level experience where he seemed good as like a teacher type of person. So
and you want to continue developing on that front?
For sure.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a nice bonus.
My goal in hiring this person is I just want somebody to work with day to day.
As opposed to you take the development and you're out of it entirely. That's not the plan.
Correct. I am going to do more of a marketing push in the coming months. And so I do need to free myself up. It will be nice to have him shipping features while I'm doing marketing, but I'm not stopping the development by any means. I'm definitely fully in it, the design, the development, thinking through features. And like, I'm really just looking for somebody to have like a daily call with and work on features together, you know?
I feel like that's the fastest. Two people on engineering, unless it's just one person who's very, very good, but you're still in the add someone and increase velocity stage. No, we talked about that. I'm kind of starting to come out of that, and you add someone, it actually slows things down. I feel like right now is you'll feel a lot more speed.
Yeah. Just to get into like the economics of it, I'm not going to go into exact numbers, but I like the way that I approach this. I hired this guy on a part-time basis. I wanted somebody part-time. I know I can't really afford somebody like full. I don't want to dive into like a full-time salary or anything like that. But most people in these cases just pay somebody by their hourly rate, and they sort of track their hours, whether it's through Upwork or TopTal or some other way, and that's that. But I just like other things. I like predictable. I like steady. So I do like a monthly retainer, flat dollar amount that we both agree to, and we agree like you're with me for 3 full days a week. That's the deal. We basically agree that like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, he's working with me. Thursday, Friday, weekend, he can do whatever he wants.
Right. That way you're not looking at the number of hours worked. You're just looking at just getting stuff done together.
Exactly. Yeah. The hourly thing, it, not that like developers really take advantage of this, but the incentives are not straight. They're incentivized to go into a rabbit hole once in a while and spend extra hours, really, if you think about it. Like, again, not like they always do that, but if we think about that shape up process that everybody's talking about now, I was talking to him about like the first project that we're doing together, and it's a very small thing. It's actually like an internal tool sort of thing. And I'm like, look, I don't want to spend more than 2 weeks on this. I don't even care how far along we get in that 2 weeks. Let's just see what we can build in that time. It's a good first project for us to work together. And when we're done with 2 weeks, that's it. We're done with it. And I like that predictability. And I think that developers like that too. I definitely found that when I presented it to the people that I interviewed, they were all like, oh yeah, that seems really attractive to me, because I know that what I'm saying, and this is true, I'm good for the rest of the of 2019 at least. I would like to go far beyond that with this person long term, but cash is in the bank for this position through the end of the year, no matter what happens. So they can expect that, like especially for somebody who's transitioning from a full time to freelance, to have this like steady retainer all lined up, it should be pretty good.
Yeah, and I think it's a more mature approach to working. The number of hours that you're actually sitting on your computer writing code is not the total number of hours that you're thinking about it while you're washing dishes that at night. Like, you know, this is what our engineers tell us, and a lot of the engineers in Slovenia, they get in pretty late, and we give them that leeway. You want to come in at 9:45, 10 o'clock, it's like, it's just as long as you're there for the stand-up, you're good. They don't feel any qualms about when they need to leave early. Some nights they're staying till 8 o'clock, and it's not like you're getting credits and giving credits. And it's just you're an adult. You just do what you need to do. It feels like an empathetic approach. Like, that's how I would want it.
Totally. I just think that like billing anything by the hour is just does not, there's no, nobody is incentivized in that model. Because even if you're the freelancer and you know that you're billing by the hour, then you have that on your mind while you're working. Then you're like, all right, well, if I go down this certain path, that might solve the problem, but I don't know how many hours that's going to be. And I don't know if the client and I agree to that. And then it's like all this extra BS that you don't need to be thinking about. Whereas if you're just like, all right, I'm on this monthly retainer, I know how much work I'm doing with this person. Let's see what happens during that time and just try to build the best stuff that we can, you know?
Yes, I totally agree. So look, I was going to talk a bit about that process. The truth is I just went onto the Rogue Startups podcast with Craig Hewitt yesterday and talked for like an hour about the process. So if you want to catch up on that, check out that episode. I'm sure that'll come out soon. So we've run a little long, but before we go, we thought a cool topic was going to be what's happening in podcasting. So Andrew Wilkinson, who is the former, maybe still the founder of MetaLab. MetaLab was the design company behind Slack and Ballpark and they've just done some really interesting work.
Flow, right?
Flow, that's right.
Yeah.
And Andrew, he has a company called Tiny, and they acquire apps and run them. So he's just into the bootstrapping, non-VC, base campy world. And he made a splash, I think it was yesterday or the day before, with a really crafty piece of content marketing, right? If we're going to be honest, it was content marketing for a product that they were launching. But the concepts in the blog post about podcasting, right? So the key feature that this new podcasting platform has that they're launching is paid subscriptions. So instead of just launching it with, hey, we have this cool thing with paid subscriptions and you can make money.
I'm going to pull this instead, up. So you sent it to me yesterday.
Yes. And so he came out with a Medium post. What was the title?
I'm pulling it up right now.
Yes.
All right. I mean, it's perfect.
It's perfect.
The headline is Howard Stern is getting ripped off.
Yes. So I mean, Howard Stern, we all know, has made a bona fide fortune in radio and then made huge news when he went over to Sirius XM, whatever he did, for what, $300 million or $500 million, something absurd crazy, amount of money.
Yes. He's renewed that contract a few times. And
so what Andrew was doing was looking at that and saying, now, if he were a podcaster with his own subscriptions, he would be making a lot more. And he used the example of Joe Rogan making, again, another bona fide fortune in what he's doing with his podcast off advertising. And what Andrew was arguing was that podcasting in Asia is already going towards subscriptions. He was talking about Chinese podcasters making millions of dollars a year off of subscriptions because of the size of the audience. The truth is, he was saying the relatively small size of the audience given their market and still making a fortune. And so it was just this interesting thing. And we have people in that space. Speaking of Craig Hewitt, right, with Castos, they're in that space. There's just a lot happening in podcasting. And you were saying earlier also that what have you noticed?
Well, I just love the idea of what they're doing. I know other podcasting companies are going in this direction of like subscription podcasting, paid shows. I mean, it does make so much sense to me. You can do things like, if you have like a twice a week show, one show is free, the other one is paid, things like that. And there's just so many different options for that.
You can gate content, you can have exclusive offers, you can have things that you're not willing to talk about publicly, but are willing to talk about more privately. There's a lot of it. I mean, you and I don't monetize this in any way. We don't do advertising, we don't do anything, but it's an interesting thing to just be confronted with on the subscription part. Like, okay, what if we did shows that were separate and more exclusive, that we were willing to talk about certain things or have certain people on? And you and I don't do this professionally, right? But if you think about these media companies and podcasting companies and people who do this as professionals, it opens up anything that opens up the business model beyond advertising is a good thing.
Yeah.
Whether it's for podcasting or the web or music or anything else.
Yeah, for sure. And if you think about it, like all these podcasts that do a lot of advertising, who's really listening to the ads? Everybody skips the ads.
The homepage of the company that Andrew was launching with that piece of content nailed it, where the first thing you see on the headline is not another MeUndies ad.
Right.
Which is perfect. We all know exactly what they mean because we all have heard it and fast forward through advertising and on podcasts.
Yeah. I will say I've been listening to the Conan podcast a bit, and his ads are pretty hilarious. But
really, I feel like that's the ideal, that you can make them engaging. But exactly. Most don't.
Yeah. There's a lot that I've been thinking about doing with podcasting going forward, not on this show, but like podcasting is interesting from a marketing standpoint, because so I have my productized podcast where I've done a bunch of interviews, and I haven't published a new episode of that in like a year, something like that. I still get people coming to me today saying, oh, I listened to your podcast. And I always assume that they're talking about Bootstrapped Web. The truth is, Bootstrapped Web and like our listeners here, we're in this like little small group within a group within a group on the internet. Like we've got our own little bubble here. But people find these other interview shows. For me, especially people interested in like productized services and my interviews there. Like, so I still get traffic and people tuning into my stuff there. And I haven't even published in over a year. Getting back to the email marketing thing, it's like people are not either not reading the emails or maybe they're not getting delivered. Who knows? Because of Gmail and all this stuff. I just definitely see podcasting being that direction as like it's a really efficient content delivery and like branding channel. Because if you're tuning into somebody's podcast, you're so much more tuned in than if you're like reading blog posts or even just skimming their email newsletter sometimes or them on Twitter. If you're listening to them in the car or walking your dog or whatever, like it's a lot more powerful. And so like I've been thinking about bringing back productized podcasts, maybe calling it something different because it's not only about productized services. I think kind of unique ideas on the format and making it a little bit more optimized. So that's not coming anytime soon, but maybe in the next couple of months, as I start to ramp up marketing for Process Kit, I think some form of podcasting is going to play into all of that. So
cool. We'll see. Yeah, I like it. It's a powerful bond with the audience and the hosts. And yeah, we have loved seeing a lot more people in the bootstrap space just come out with their own podcasts. It's like, it's fun. It's entertaining and it's not so distant, right? We've talked about the How I Built This podcast and how well produced it is, but the stories feel so distant. I just don't have anything to do with Yves Chouinard from Patagonia. Like there's no connection. It's like reading a magazine story. Cool. But other people who are closer to our peers, you have a much more real connection.
I really like this trend. Ben Orenstein and I were talking about this, I think, on the previous episode, and I love tuning into business podcasts from folks, our peers in these circles, especially people that I know or that I love to follow. That's the type of podcast that I listen to more than anything else. So I really like seeing more of them. I don't know. At some point, I thought it might be cool for like you and I to like maybe talk about some tips for doing this, like doing a show like this. Because I listen to some of these and again, I'm all for it. I want to see more of it. But sometimes, especially in the early episodes, which is perfectly natural, like they're getting a feel for it. I want to see a little bit more energy. Everyone listening who wants to start a podcast, I want to hear more energy, more follow-up questions, more digging into each other's story, you know, instead of just like, here's what I did this week and okay, cool. Over to you. Here's what I did. Okay, cool. Like, that's what I want to hear. That's what's juicy. That's what people want to hear. They want to hear about the struggle. You got to be open about that.
I think we could take some criticism ourselves.
For sure. Please. Yeah.
we can definitely improve. I think it just takes time. If I remember back to when we first started, you were already doing this for a while. You were comfortable. I was not comfortable for a while. And then as you get more comfortable, then you get to reveal your personality more because you're comfortable. And so that's where you want to get to.
And the early episodes when it was just me were terrible. Like, don't listen to those.
that's good.
And we still get people emailing, be like, oh yeah, I started on Bootstrap Web episode one. I'm working my way through. And I'm like, why? Why are you doing that?
that's good. Cool. Yeah. I don't listen to ours. You know, you forget it's being recorded. But I've been loving Art of Product. I've been loving Build Your SaaS with Justin and his co-founder, John. That, I love that. It's such a glimpse at, it feels to me anyway, you're listening to two people right before they're building a big company. It's going to happen. They're in the right place. They're doing the right things. They're listening to customers the right way. It's going to work. And we get to listen to them before it happens. I love it. I feel the same way about Art of Product and Tuple. And it's just this glimpse at the alchemy involved. And it is not pretty. It is not perfect. It is all the vulnerabilities and all the doubts. And it still comes true. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, for sure. So the ones that I listen to are Art of Product, everyone. Slow and Steady is a new one. Out of Beta. The SaaS Reality podcast. I've heard a couple of those. Business Time. Rogue Startups with Craig Hewitt. That's sort of like my rotation. I don't listen to all episodes on all of those, but I like to see more of these in that vein. So
cool. Yeah. We should awesome. Link up to those.
Yeah. For sure.
Good stuff, man. Brian, have a great weekend. Relax, detox from your foray into technical land.
Yes. Of course, I'm going to go hang out with a bunch of technical people next week. So anyway.
Yes. Cool, man. Great to catch up. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
See you.